Welcome to Between Sundays. I'm Tyler, but that's Little Miss Perfect to you. Today we're wrestling with the Bible and inadvertently soliciting advertising from BibleHub.com. But before we rejoice with a glorious inexpressible joy, now that they flooded their basements, let's count it all joy and welcome in our favorite heartless little tin man Roy robots. Marin and Barry, good day, guys.
Heartless little tin man joy robots.
That's right.
Hi.
Man, there was a lot of good stuff.
Yeah,
to pull.
Trying to just jam pack it.
It's just like every 45 seconds. It's like you were getting paid by BibleHub.com
to keep mentioning it.
Yeah. Oh, man. It's like, I hate to repeat myself, but BibleHub.com.
I just want them to know there are resources at their disposal.
So first thing, of course, what I did in the middle of the sermon, you kept saying BibleHub.com. So I went to BibleHub.com solely to see, like, do they have advertising on their website?
Oh.
And it turns out they do.
Really?
Oh, for
it's like... Well, this is boring for Friends of the Pod, but it's like if you...
This is boring for me. I don't even know what you're talking
there,
about.
When I went there, there was a banner that said like, perfect foods for arthritis.
Oh.
Because
they know about your arthritis.
Yeah, my personal arthritis, yeah. Anyways. Yeah. Guys, what's new? What's going on?
What is new? I have at home... Next to, so, you know, I finished those bookshelves. We have our little study and now that room has actually become exactly what we hoped it would be. We've got two little recliner chairs in there and like one's Liv's and one's mine. And we spend so much time in there, but that's next awesome. To my recliner chair is a veritable like mountain of books. I think at a new phase in the number of, I don't think I've ever been in the middle of so many books.
Instead of your books on the shelves behind you, they're just stacked up next to your chair.
These are the books that I'm in the middle of right now. Uh-huh. And so they're like, I rotate through them and I'm picking them up. I think I'm in the middle of 12 books right
now.
And I'm legitimately reading all of them, but it's too much. It's too much. I can't
don't act like you're a big shot.
I mean, I don't know. I'm just like, there's so many things I want to learn. And I'm like, this is so,
can you retain anything when you're reading 12 books?
The way that I'm reading now? Yeah. I've finally got a good system for marking things up and writing and keeping track of my notes. And
Do you have book reading goals for 2025
goals? Like I guess more than last year, which was like 35 or something. So I'm on track obviously with 12, but, there's just like some really, really exciting, very exciting books to me. There was one I didn't get for Christmas and I was really bummed. So I just bought it for myself.
Yeah.
Are they all about like Roman imperial cults and history and things like that?
A lot of them. It's kind of all over the map. One of them is reading again, N.T. Wright's biography of Paul, which I'm reading in advance of our Ephesus trip that's coming up later this year. I'm reading the Quran because I've never read that before. So why not? I had no idea it had so much stuff from the Bible in it. Mm-hmm. It's really fascinating. Yeah, so I'm reading that. The thing I'm most excited about is about the Roman imperial cult. Specifically, it's the text and commentary of the Res Gestae Divi Augusti, which is the achievements of the divine Augustus. And this is like basically something that Augustus Caesar wrote right before he died. And then they put it up on two bronze plaques in Rome. And then they were copied and had Greek versions put up in parts of Turkey. And it's like so fascinating to think, okay, this is what he wanted the world to remember of his achievements. What is it? What does he have to say? And what's he like sweeping under the rug? And it's really cool. So
it's not like Where the Red Fern Grows.
No, I always throw in like one or two fiction books. Okay. I'm reading a really awesome book series, sci-fi book series about like hyper-intelligent spiders.
So does it just depend on your mood? Like which of the 12 you pick up at any given time?
Yeah. I think it's like part mood, part, whatever like book is the one I'm like most thinking about. I'll want to keep moving through it, but sometimes I'm like, oh, I haven't touched this one in a sec. Let me read this one. And for whatever reason I can pick right back up where I left off and it works. So anyway, that's been a blast. I'm having a good time with that. And I'm back on track with learning Greek. I got kind of thrown off by Christmas, but I'm back on track and I'm moving forward. Okay. So yeah,
that's good.
It's good. Geeking out, learning, having a good time.
Sweet.
But you guys,
Marin, what's new with you?
I put my Christmas decorations away
Hey,
last night. So
eager to navigate the fun.
Was it ever? Was it ever fun?
You did that yesterday after you preached.
That's right. Wow. I was like, that's it. I can't take it anymore.
So when you came in here and you were like, I'm just so tired. I'm like, well, what'd you do yesterday? Well, you could have rested.
But no, I couldn't have rested because if I would have rested,
Christmas would have gone into February.
Yet another day.
Another day.
Into February.
Yeah.
Yeah. It had to end.
So like, was your Christmas tree, everything was still up?
Yes.
Do you have outdoor lights, like outdoor decorations that were still up?
No, but you just reminded me that the two Christmas bows on my garage lights are still up.
No rest tonight. Yeah, it's time to get those taken care of.
Time to get those things down. So how long does that take you? With the help of three other adults in your house.
Excuse me?
How long does that take you to
this help you're describing? Why do you think it waited until after yesterday's sermon? Yeah. No. What is this?
Everybody
help
else is fine
about?
With the year-long Christmas decorations.
Apparently they have other priorities. Jed did help me like get it up into the attic, but I started the process of undecorating about a week ago, but that just meant we had like bin upon bin of Christmas goods just hanging out in my kitchen waiting for me to finish it up when I got
done with
the message.
Does that make you not want to decorate anymore like years and years to come?
It sure does.
Yeah.
It does, in fact. Yeah. Talk to me in like November and then I'll be like like yesterday I was like, this is the end. Yeah. We're not doing this again.
Because it'd be one thing if it was like, we decorate for when the kids come home. Right. And they need to come home to a place that's like festive, but they live there.
Right. Yeah.
They live there.
I asked Jed to put away this carton I have. I have this like, I don't know. I have this cylinder where I keep Christmas cookie cutters. Oh. And he's like, what are these? I don't know that we've ever made Christmas cookies.
But when you do.
He said, are these just for our grandchildren? Are you holding on to these for our grandchildren? Of course I am.
Yeah,
I'll start caring about decorating when I have grandchildren. But until then, bah humbug, we're done. We're finished with it all.
Does your eagerness for festivity, like festive Christmas decorations and things like that, has any of that rubbed off onto your children? Like
eagerness?
Like,
do you just do it purely out of obligation?
So a couple of years ago, we came to a Christmas meeting that you were leading and the entire room, we showed up and it was decorated. There were like,
oh yeah,
oranges on the table. I was like, what are the oranges for?
That's right. That's when we had the Christmas
trees
orange
up.
Argument.
Yeah.
You and I.
Yeah. Cause I didn't understand what oranges had to do with
Christmas.
Christmas
orange. Right.
But, so you had it all decorated for a staff meeting.
Cause you gotta get in the mindset when you're planning Christmas services in July.
Mm. Yeah. You're all about you decorated your house by yourself. You took it down by yourself. Does any of this rub off onto your children who are like, can you see something in them? Like when they have their houses of their own one day that you're like, they're going to be, this is rubbing off on them. They're going to want to decorate. Like they're going to be excited to decorate.
They're
going to
feel
homes.
Obligated to, I think. As good Americans, they're going to feel obligated to decorate their homes. No, it used to be magic, right? When they were of a certain age, probably the ages that your kids are now. Yeah. It used to be Christmas magic.
About as helpful as your kids sound.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the tradition now is mom sets up and tears it down.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
That's where we're at.
All right.
But it's done. The point is it's done.
It's done.
I can go home to a clean house and it's done.
So last week we talked, in the whole What's New segment, we talked about, you're on the beginning of your journey with seminary and you had just gotten accepted to a seminary.
I
don't know if we said the name, but, is there any further updates?
You know, there is.
I know. I got it written down right here.
What a setup this is.
what would you like friends of the pod to know?
Well, what day was that, Tyler? I think that was Thursday. I was accepted to Fuller, which is
that's my alma mater.
Alma mater. So then I had a decision to make between these two schools I was accepted to. And I talked to, my three mentors really, asking them for advice and what they would choose. And unequivocally, all three of them said that Fuller was the right choice.
Really?
So, wow. That's where we're going, okay. Huh?
I officially finished my first orientation class right before I came upstairs.
Whoa, I didn't know that. You already started?
Yeah, I'm in.
What?
I had no idea. Okay, congrats.
Way to break the news here.
I mean, maybe she wanted to let us know live.
Guys,
You were not going to bring that up.
I've been chugging away.
Well, congratulations.
That's awesome.
Thank you, friends. Thank you.
Yeah, you, never mind. I'll bring that up after the show. So Fuller, that's in California.
Pasadena. Mm-hmm.
So do you need like the lead team to like drive you to like move in for orientation and yeah. like, get your dorm set up? What do you need?
I don't know. I want a sweatshirt, you know? I want to be that person who yeah. wears the sweatshirt yeah. of the college she's associated yeah. with. That's what
never
I
never once crossed my mind. Ever. Never has until this moment. I was like, oh.
Yeah, can you get Barry one?
I never even thought yeah. about that.
That's what I want.
My program was mostly online mm-hmm. with a couple of classes that were like hybrid classes where I had to go out for like a week-long intensive. Is that still part of it or is it all just online now?
I think there's an option to do that. Uh-huh. Of course, all my classes will be online, especially yeah. in the beginning, but I think there are still options, hybrid options to yeah, be able to hybrid. Go out there. Should that be necessary or even should I want to?
You should totally do it. They were highlights for me. That was great.
Yeah. But
that's awesome, man. Oh, great. I'm so proud of you.
They've
I'm
got
so
an
excited.
Online store. You can get hats. You can get infant and children's apparel.
Oh, I don't need that now. Maybe
for
my grandkids.
For the grandkids. Get it to them. Give them to them for Christmas.
Water bottles, tote bag. You like a good tote bag.
I love a good tote bag.
Coffee mugs.
I love a good coffee mug.
Yeah, I might have to get some of this too now because I feel like I'm in on it too.
That would be hilarious if you had Fuller gear and I don't.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, awesome. Congrats. That's great.
Thanks.
So you've got the orientation class now. When's mm-hmm. your first official like full on class?
Classes begin in March. So I, okay. Yeah.
Spring semester?
I applied for the spring semester. Yeah.
Wow. March what?
I don't know. I'm right at the beginning of everything.
Yeah, right.
So I was accepted on Thursday. I had, you know, a couple of things to finalize this morning, including that orientation class. Only upon completing the orientation class will the counselor give me a call or set up an appointment with me mm-hmm. to actually pick my first round of classes and register and get all that underway.
Incredible.
Yeah, it's exciting and it's terrifying. And I go back and forth between being super stoked
yeah.
because I've always wanted to do this and super terrified mm-hmm. that this is going to be so much work.
Yeah.
And how can
it'll
I,
be a lot.
How will I shoulder the burden?
A hoopamane.
Hoopamane. Get you some of that hoopamane.
I'm playing a little sick today. This happens like once or twice a year where I wake up and I like can't get out of my bed because my head hurts. Mm. So I have like a migraine today. And so this was the thing that when I woke up, I didn't get out of my bed till like 12:30 today. And I got out and I was like, if I do anything today, it has to be the podcast. So
wow.
playing a little hurt today.
I like that your priorities
wow.
are
yeah. endurance.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah.
How do you feel right now, like compared to this morning?
Well, the bright lights.
Yeah, these are
super great.
Right
in my eyes. Compared to this morning, I feel like I'm functional. I could get up, I can walk around like functional. It still hurts, but
Are there a way to like dim these lights?
No, it's fine. It's fine.
You're squinting into the light.
Yeah, but it's all right. So I'm dealing with that. It only happens a couple times a year, but I think it's because the temperature, it feels like summer outside.
I haven't even been outside. I don't even know.
It's like 65 yeah. degrees. Mm.
Tyler, yeah. I have a question for you.
Yeah.
Lou showed up, your daughter showed yes. up to church yesterday in a princess yes. dress, wearing her Ariel dress. Mm-hmm. She was very happy to yep. be wearing it, was showing it off and stuff. Can you talk a little bit about how much of that was her decision? How yes. much of it was your decision?
Did you decide she was wearing an Ariel dress?
No. So a couple times a month, Lauren will volunteer for our Lift ministry at 9:15. I've learned to ask Lauren, is there anything you would like for her to wear, the baby? Uh-huh. Because I've shown up to church before without asking that question, choosing the outfit myself. And uh-huh. I get there and Lauren, she doesn't like say anything, but she gives me like a, that's yeah. what you chose look.
Yeah. And I know so, exactly yeah. what she's talking about.
Yeah. And so, she chose her outfit yesterday and that's what Lou was wearing under the dress.
What and Lauren had suggested.
What Lauren had picked yeah. out. And so we were there, like she goes at 9:15. So Lauren's gone for a couple of hours before I get the kids in the van and mm-hmm. go to church at 11. And so we're sitting there a couple of hours. And within that period, she wanted to watch Little Mermaid. So yeah. she wanted to watch Little Mermaid. And anytime anything comes on TV, especially if it's musical, she'll start saying that she wants to put a dress on. Mm-hmm. because she wants to dance to it or whatever. So she ran and got that dress and I helped her put it on. And when it was time to go to church, I was like, all right, let's take this dress off. And that started probably the next 9 hours of, of her just getting to call all the shots.
Yeah.
Like it was like, let's take this dress off. No. All right. You can wear the dress. But when we get to church, maybe we take it off. So we get to church, we're in the car. I'm like, all right, ready to take that dress off? No. And so she chose the dress. She walked in. She got the attention I guess she was wanting.
Yeah.
by wearing that dress. But she's probably got like 7 versions of that same dress. It's right. Like one for Elsa, one mm-hmm. for Ariel, one uh-huh. for Rapunzel, one for Encanto or whatever. So that's the one she chose. And she wore that somewhere else. Maybe to the Pacers game or something, but she wears that stuff all the time now.
Yeah.
It's just like she wears a clothes that her mom picks out and then she puts this Disney dress on over top of it and we just have to deal with it.
And she's happy.
Yeah, she's happy. So it's fine.
Sure.
Just don't cross her.
Don't cross her. I'll tell you what, I thought it was going to be a good idea. Like fun thing. Like let's get in the car and you guys all take turns. 3 kids. Each kid takes a turn picking what song we want to listen to in the car. Mm. Marin does that on all of her road trips. Everybody goes through and everybody takes a turn.
Yep.
All right. First one is Lou. We'll go youngest to oldest. All right. Great. First one's Lou. She wants Moana. So we do Moana. One song. Next person's Lane. Lane picks something, not Moana. And for the next 20 minutes, Lou's just screaming and crying that we're not listening to Moana. Yeah. Just like the whole thing. So
we didn't start the everybody gets to pick a song until my kids were probably junior high, like maybe older elementary school or early junior high. When they were that age,
when they reached the age of accountability,
whatever I wanted to listen to,
see,
which is why they have such great taste in music.
Because it went from Moana to What Does the Fox Say?
Right. Yeah. We don't play like that. That was not going to happen in my car.
That's what the rotation was.
No. We listened to Zeppelin in Kansas.
Yeah. Milo will hang with that. But when it gets to Lou and Lane, they're like, let's listen to Pumpkin Cat.
Nope.
I don't even know what that is.
That would not fly in my car. Pumpkin Cat.
Yeah. That's what it is. All right, guys. As you said it, Marin, we did it.
We did it.
We endured. We endured January. We wrapped up a sermon series, first one of the year called Endurance. And Marin, you took us home for the series. So first of all, first back-to-back preaching weekend.
2 in a row.
Reflections?
Reflections. Yeah, that was a little trickier than I anticipated it would be. My first time preaching 2 weekends in a row and really preaching on the same word, right? Mm-hmm. Even though it was a different passage, it was still the same concept, the same idea, the same word. I felt like maybe I had left it all on the table with the first sermon I did, which was 2 weeks ago. And then it was like, oh man, if I don't want to repeat myself too much, studying the same word and whatever, just felt like I probably should have parsed it out more evenly. Mm-hmm. Typically when I speak, it's once a month, every other month, something like that. And I can just kind of throw it all at the canvas and leave it all on the table. But I kind of have to pace myself if I'm doing multiple weeks in a row. So lots of lessons learned.
I thought it was great. I thought you did a wonderful job finishing up the series back to back. I thought it was awesome.
Thank you.
So
well done. So for this final week, week 5, right? 5 weeks.
Yeah. 5 weeks.
All right. So what was kind of the big idea and how did you take us home in that final week?
I took us home really talking about what it looks like to wrestle with scripture. I think for a lot of us, this idea of enduring it's a challenging idea to begin with, depending on the kinds of things that we're facing and just kind of the weight that we're under, either collectively or individually. And this one in particular was tough for me because I'm currently in close community with a lot of people who are suffering various just tragic situations or just really stressful situations. And so the idea of looking my friends in the eye and telling them to just count it all joy when they're going through such difficult times, I just really had to grapple with that. How am I going to present this scripture passage in such a way that it doesn't immediately offend them or turn them away, but more inspires them to consider things as an opportunity for joy. How do I accurately represent that and describe what that means? Mm-hmm. So that's what we did. We just wrestled for 40 minutes because I'm sure the sermon went long.
Yeah. Sometimes when we have like baptism services, we're like, all right, preacher, let's like,
hey, nobody said that.
Let's make sure nobody we're said a little that to on me. The shorter end of your sermon.
My goodness. My goodness.
And then we got to it.
Lord like, knows I tried. Yeah, I tried. There was a lot to say.
So in the beginning of your sermon, you said something that was interesting because how you wrestle with it is you said you pick it apart word by word. And you said, you pointed out that in scripture, the word patience is inextricably linked to the word endurance. Mm-hmm. To be patient is to endure is to be patient. And then you said joy and rejoice are also connected to the idea of endurance. Mm-hmm. My question to you is you've struggled with, and you said, I've struggled with this verse in James your whole life. But if this is a theme throughout the Bible where joy and rejoice connected with endurance, patience is with endurance. And they talk about that a lot. That's one of the big themes. And it's, you listed out a ton of verses that talked about that. Mm-hmm. So if this is a theme throughout the Bible, how have you navigated that until you finally wrestled with scripture? Like, was there ever a time where you flat out rejected the stuff where it was like joy and endurance or, just kind of thought it was bad theology. Like, how did you wrestle with it until you got to, because even last week you were like, man, this verse, I've always struggled with this verse. How did you come to grips? Like, when and how did you come to grips with that verse of what you actually believe
with
about?
The idea of joy?
Yeah. Was it doing through the process of the sermon or was it before that?
Through the process of this sermon, I made peace with what James is actually talking about, with what the word actually means through the process of studying for this sermon. I didn't bother. I didn't dissect the words of James chapter 1 verses 2 through 4 until I was studying for this message. And it didn't even come easy then. It was wrestling and following thought after thought and looking up this word, which led to looking up that word. And all of that led to the realization that he's not talking about traumas or tragedies. And that when he does talk about traumas and tragedies, he gives comforting language mm-hmm. or lifting our heads, things like that. He wouldn't look at, when I was in the hospital with my mom, when my mom was passing away from cancer, he wouldn't have looked me in the eye and said, count it all joy, Marin, right? There would have been comfort. There would have been a strengthening within. Sure, there were joyful moments along the way. And the ultimate joy is that my mom knew where she was going. Mm. The ultimate joy is that we will be together again, you know, after I've run my race and my race is complete. So there's joy to be had. But there's also room for sorrow and grief, and not every situation should just, you know, be welcomed with a pat answer of just count it all joy.
Mm. Like you, if I had been staring at my dad who was standing in a flood that was threatening like his business and his livelihood and also his passions, mm-hmm. I would have probably responded same as you.
Yeah.
If you haven't watched a sermon, go watch it. Cause she tells, great story about how her dad, basement flooded. That's where he had his small business. And he stood down there and he kind of threw his hands up and said, count it all joy.
Yeah. And it wasn't the first time. Like that's something he said frequently mm-hmm. when crappy things would happen.
Yeah.
And I think I just had it at that point as a teenager of I've heard you say this over and over again, whenever faced with a negative situation. And it just rubbed me the wrong way as a teenager. This is a negative situation. And maybe I was being too literal about the situation, mm-hmm. whatever it was that he was determining should be counted as joy. He definitely didn't break it down for me in the moment.
Sure.
Of like, well, this honey is why I'm saying.
And he wasn't finishing the sentence either. He was just saying count it all joy.
That's right.
But the sentence goes on.
That's right.
When your faith is tested, because then it produces these things in you. But he was just kind of assuming all of that. But the phrase was all you were hearing.
It was a catchphrase.
Yeah.
And I heard it a lot. So,
So I would have responded similar to you. That's what I was going to say. It was like, I hear that And if I'm picturing myself, you were standing at the top of the stairs mm-hmm. and he's in the bottom. I would have been like, quit being so like toxic, positive, like this
when
way
of, life hands of, you lemons,
yeah, avoiding your right. avoiding hard things or running away from really hard things. And so I guess my question is now is like, do you think your dad was right? Or were you right to have your guard up about him? I was talking to somebody about this and they were like, how do we know when we're gaslighting ourselves into believing something yeah. that's like that, or we truly have the perspective of count it all joy? It's like, were you right to have your guard up about that and suffering hard things, or looking back at it now with a deeper understanding, are you like, I wish I could be more like him in that moment? Mm.
I don't think I was wrong or right in that moment.
Well, someone's always right or wrong.
No, I don't think it's like that. In my humanness, I felt despair, right? But I didn't understand what he understood. Again, it's not the first time he said, count it all joy. He knew what that meant to him in that moment. Mm-hmm. Again, I said it in the message, he's putting a stake in the ground that he's choosing joy and resisting the temptation to choose despair, right? And so in that, he was absolutely right to take a moment to remind his soul to reject despair and remember none of this stuff is going to last forever. Remember that there's an eternal hope beyond just this basement and the things contained in this basement. And we could do that in any adverse circumstance, in any trial. I could do that with my mom in the hospital. Things are terrible and I don't have to be happy that she has cancer, but I can be happy that there are far greater things waiting for her, things that will last forever. So yeah, he was not wrong to count it all joy. I think if it were me standing in the basement and my angsty teen at the top of the stairs, maybe I would have recognized the angst in my teen mm-hmm. and taken a moment to teach them what I mean when I'm saying count it all joy. Here's why I'm saying this, because nothing in this basement's going to last forever. And I'm reminding my soul that, you know, there are better things waiting for me and whatever. Mm-hmm. I would probably take it as a teachable moment.
Yeah.
And there may have been other times where he tried to do that throughout my life. Maybe I just couldn't hear him or was too locked up in my own feelings, but I don't think it was wrong for me to look at the water in the basement and say, oh, this is terrible. It was terrible. But that's like dimension one, right? Looking at a bad situation and knowing it's bad. Then there's dimension two, looking at a bad situation, knowing it's bad, but knowing you're not alone in it, knowing that none of this stuff is eternal, knowing that we do have eternal things waiting for us, knowing that he'll endow us with the strength to clean up the basement and get through the thing. And, you know, it's unfortunate and it's unwelcomed, but there's still joy to be had in the midst of it.
Is strength to be had. I don't remember where I heard this or read it, or maybe I just thought of it, but is it kind of like, this may be an oversimplification, but when bad things happen, instead of asking like, why me, or why is this happening, or why, you ask a question like, what's next, or what would you have me do? Or is it kind of like that, where it's like you're standing in the midst of crisis, but instead of being like, why me, you're kind of focused on a forward perspective.
I think there might be a stop between that, right? Instead of saying, why me, or okay, Lord, what do you want me to do? I think there's a point in the middle where you just say, meet me here, right? So the basement is flooded and things are bad. We're rejecting the temptation to despair and we're calling upon God to meet us in the watery basement, right? And then when he meets us, or as we're calling him to meet us, then we can talk about, all right, Lord, should I call my friends to come with towels and buckets? Or do I call the insurance company first? Or, you know, then you kind of take more practical action steps, you know, in whatever that crisis is. But I feel like there's always an initial moment, no matter the crisis, no matter even the grief or the trauma, where it's, I can't do this alone. I need you to meet me here.
Yeah.
So the analogy that comes to mind as you're saying that, I keep thinking about something that happened to me a lot when I was traveling with World Next Door. I would find myself in these situations where I'm like, oh man, mm-hmm. I don't know what's going to come next. I don't know how I'm going to get out of this. Mm-hmm. And one of the phrases that would come to me as I got a little bit more experienced with that type of thing happening is I would basically in my head just think, oh man, this is going to make for a great story. Like, I don't know where this is going, but I can't wait to see where it's going, because this will make a great story. So that's kind of more of like a flippant sort of way of looking at it. But it is that same kind of idea of, I'm in a crisis. I don't know how I'm going to get out of this, but I can see on the other side of this, mm-hmm. this will make a great story. And it's like saying, I don't know how I'm going to get out of this thing that I'm facing right now, but I know God's going to show up, or he's going to do something in me, or I'm going to be transformed, or I'm going to learn or grow. Like, it's that sort of acknowledgement of, I know there's more to this. And so I choose to believe that versus giving into the despair, because mm-hmm. I could, in those moments when I'm thinking specifically of the time that the I got like nearly arrested in this small village in South Sudan, and they wanted me to like come to their office and give them over my passport and all that stuff. And in that moment, I could have freaked out, because I'm like, this is it. I'm going to die in a South Sudanese jail. But instead, I was like, this will make a great story. You know, it's that same kind of like mindset. It doesn't change the situation. Yeah. It just changes the way that you approach the situation. Yeah.
I think you are just naturally more optimistic than I am. I think you're more inclined to joy than I am.
That's possible.
Maybe that's why this was a bit more of a wrestling match for me, but
you better rejoice.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know that, you know, and I think that this will make a good story works well for the situations you're describing. It might not work well for other situations. You know, having my mom right. fall sick, I don't want that story.
No.
I don't care how great that story it is. It's not a great, I don't want that story. Right. Or even the basement flooded. Maybe it'll make a great story. Maybe right. stuff will be damaged that's irreplaceable. You know, thank goodness we didn't keep photo albums down there, stuff like right. that, you know?
I guess to be clear, I'm not saying that we should consider it all joy with this will make a great story.
Yeah.
Because that's not what I'm saying. I'm
but
just
it's
saying
the, idea.
It's the same idea of yeah. in that moment where I don't know where it's going to end, I'm choosing to trust that there will be something beyond this,
yes.
that God will show up for me in some way that maybe I can't see right yeah. now.
It's and he'll meet trust. You in that South Sudanese jail, you know, if yeah. if it comes to it.
Right.
If it comes to the worst of the worst, he meets you there.
Yeah.
Even there.
I got out, by the way.
Thank goodness. You mentioned Hebrews 12:2, where mm-hmm. it kind of says Jesus endured the cross because of the joy set before him. Mm-hmm. And you mentioned something a couple minutes ago, particularly about your mom situation. But the whole because of the joy set before him stood out to me. And it makes me wonder, does that mean that joy is always future oriented? It's hard to do that. In my mind, it's hard to do that when the present is so unbearable.
Yeah.
Is joy always future oriented? Is that what we're saying? Is that the whole, like, Jesus endured the cross because the joy set before him, talking about what was awaiting your mom.
Yeah.
Like that kind of stuff.
In his case in particular, you know, he wept in the Garden of Gethsemane asking that this cup be taken from him. He did not want to go to the cross by any means. And yet he was obedient, and he did because of that lasting joy, because of those things that are eternal that will last forever, because of the joy set before him. So in that case, yeah, it was future oriented. I think in a lot of cases it is future oriented. I had a situation over the weekend that was both and, right? So I got the call from Fuller that I was, that they'd accepted me to their MDiv program, and said that there'd be an email coming the following morning with further information, and that would be like the official acceptance letter, mm-hmm. right? And so I'm driving down the street Saturday morning, going to meet a friend for coffee, and I had my phone in my dashboard on that little clippy thing, and out of the corner of my eye, I saw the acceptance email come in. Mm. And I screamed behind the wheel. I did one of those like...
You swerved in traffic.
No, I was yeah. barely to the end of my block. But I did one of those things where I screamed with joy and I pounded on a steering wheel because I just got my acceptance letter. that was like initial joy. But I'm not joyful just that I got accepted. I'm looking forward to completing the program. Like, that's the whole point, right? Mm-hmm. You don't go into school just to go into school. You go into school with an end goal in mind. And so I'm joyful initially, but then immediately that wore off to, what have I done? Because this is going to be so hard and I'm going to have so much work to do. And how am I going to preach? And how am I going to meet friends for coffee and have pastoral appointments and do all the things that my full-time job demands, do all the things that my family demands, and go to school? Suddenly, it's this huge, intense mountain that doesn't look so joyful. But for the joy set before me, I'll endure it to get to the end. So it's like there was joy at the beginning. It's about to get real hard. Mm-hmm. But hopefully there will be joy at the end. You know, it'll be
a Little Miss Perfect.
It's a little joy sandwich. Beginning, not so middle, end.
So how
and maybe there will be joy along the way
as I learn
really cool stuff and, you know, interact with students from around the world. And I'm sure there will be joy to be found and be had along the way, but
cool
it will
stuff.
Also be tremendously difficult.
All right. You mentioned the tragedy and trauma mm-hmm. versus trial and temptation. Can you kind of clearly define kind of where that line is? I think trauma is definitely one of those words in 2025 where it's like trauma means like having a hard day or something. Mm-mm. Like we've hijacked it to mean something that maybe it doesn't mean. But as you were preaching, I was like, yes, okay, good. Tragedies and traumas, there's room for grief, trials and temptations. It's like, mm-hmm. this is what we're talking about. But sometimes the line is blurry on what's what.
Right.
How do we decipher?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I almost had a different intro for this message. I was working on this message weeks ago. And we all got a message from someone we're really close with that a loved one of theirs has been diagnosed with Alzheimer's. And again, I'd been in my office reading James. He's telling us to count it all joy. And again, I thought, how can I look at this person, this family facing, you know, this dire situation, somebody in their family just having been diagnosed with something so terrible, how can I look at them and tell them to count it all joy? The relief came for me when I realized that there are other words in the Bible for sorrow and for grief, that there's room. Again, my struggle was where is there room for grief or for sadness or even for anger in count it all joy? Right? I grew up in the church and I've heard this preached so many times. And sometimes they key in on that word all, you know, all mm-hmm. means all. So count it all joy.
Right.
And that's where I constantly struggled with this verse is, can that be true? Can I look at somebody who just got a horrible diagnosis or a terminal diagnosis or a death of a loved one? Or can I look at that person and say, count it all joy? So I was comforted that thalipsis exists and that there are other words for mourning or for grief. I was comforted that when I read the scripture passages that include those words, again, you see things like take heart, take courage. Blessed are those who mourn for they will be comforted. The language is different and it's not just, nope, count it all joy. And yet, like you just read, but for the joy set before him, Jesus endured the cross. Praise be to God, this person who had just been diagnosed with Alzheimer's is a believer and knows where they're going. And so even through the darkest valley, there's also still joy to be had, joy to be found because of those things that are eternal, because of those things that last forever. So it's like this mingling of comfort and joy and sorrow and strength. It's like all of the things. Where initially I felt like, man, I'm just gonna be slapping this family in the face,
yeah,
to tell them to count it all joy. Now I feel like, no, that's not what I'm telling this family. I'm telling this family that, you know, blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted. That the Lord is near to the brokenhearted, and there is joy on the other side of all of this suffering. I think I felt freed up in my own soul to take a closer look at the words, to take a closer look at the word that's used for troubles in James 1. I'm drawing a blank right now on what it is.
Parasmus. But
there it is. Yeah. It brought a little clarity to it, that I don't have to look at my friends that are experiencing these traumas and these tragedies and say, just count it all joy. I can sit with them in their grief. I can weep with them, right? I could comfort them with the comfort with which I was comforted when I was grieving, right? Mm-hmm. There's all kinds of descriptions of that. And I don't have to just be like, well, hey, take your bad situation and just count it all joy. And yet, I can also encourage them that there is joy. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You pointed out in your message that word perasmos means testing or putting something to the proof. Like it's mm-hmm. like, it's like a trial.
Yeah. Or temptation.
But it's usually in the New Testament, it's usually referring to like a time of trial where mm-hmm. your faith is tested, and it's almost like, are you legit or not? Are you in or are you out? And that's what James is saying. When that happens, you should be joyful when you're being tested, because it's going to produce endurance in you. It's going to produce mm-hmm. hupomone in you. And so I think there are times where hardships can lead to a testing of your faith.
Absolutely.
But that's not what James is saying. That's not necessarily what James has in mind here. He's talking about anything that's going to test your faith, prove the legitimacy of your faith, that's an opportunity for joy. Mm-hmm. And so it's kind of, if there's a Venn diagram, there are things that are hardships and traumas, as you said, that's not something to be joyful for. That's something to lean on God for. But there are sometimes hardships and trials that actually do test your faith, and that testing is what produces endurance. So it's like, it's a Venn diagram.
I'm glad you said Venn diagram, because even in the situation with my mom, I needed to be comforted. I was grieving. If somebody looked at me and told me to count it all joy, I probably would have punched them.
Yeah.
And yet, there was joy,
yeah,
because we knew that we don't grieve as those who have no hope.
Right.
Even in the worst of situations, there was still joy to be had. There's some crossover between these situations.
Do you think it's easy for us to mix up happiness and joy?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. I see happiness as fleeting, occasional, momentary, mm-hmm. and joy as something that's like this steady undercurrent that can increase with time, that provides us with strength. I don't think happiness provides me with strength. Mm-hmm. I go down a lot of rabbit trails when I'm writing messages, and sometimes it involves looking up the etymology of words like that. Mm-hmm. What's the difference between happiness and joy? And in most cases, joy was had more lasting power than happiness. Happiness was temporary or momentary.
So when we go around, like a couple of years ago, I was having breakfast with somebody and I was going through a hard time, and they said, "Don't let this rob you of your joy." And in my mind, I'm like, what is there to be like, I'm not happy or I'm not joyful, I guess right now.
Yeah.
There's a difference between what you're talking about, the thing that gives you strength, and saying something like, what is there to be joyful or happy about?
Yeah.
So I guess, what do we mean when we go around as Christians saying like, the joy of the Lord is our strength, and don't let this rob you of your joy? What do we mean? If we don't mean happiness, what are we meaning by that?
I think joy, I'm thinking about the fruits of the Spirit, and mm-hmm. I think each of the fruits of the Spirit has a, I don't know if the word cheaper is right, but it's like a cheaper version mm-hmm. That you could come up with. Like there's, you know, peace. There's also like someone who's
tolerance
or not that flappable, but like someone who has peace, that's like a deep well of that goes way beyond calmness. You know what I mean? It's like there's a level to which I'm at peace with the world. We could probably go through all the different fruits of the Spirit, but I think joy is another example. Joy is a fruit of the Spirit. It's not happiness, although sometimes joyful people are happy, joy is this is so much deeper. I think of joy as something that kind of is a wellspring of hope. It comes up when you have a reason to hope, because we've put our faith in Christ, because he has given us new life, because we know who we are, that the Creator loves us. Like, all of those are the types of things that stimulate, I think, joy, genuine joy in us. Even though, yeah, there are times when a joyful person isn't happy. That's seems like a paradox, but it's not. I think joy is something that goes deeper.
Yeah.
And yeah, it is kind of a tricky thing though, when you are in the pit of despair and someone says to you, don't let this rob your joy.
Yeah.
I get that. It's I don't know. But I do think there is that misconception that like Christians are all supposed to be these like shiny, happy people. And like, you're not allowed to show sadness. You're supposed to just, you know, buck up and pretend that everything's okay. But that's not what that is. That's not what we're talking about when we say joy.
No. And really read Nehemiah 8. When you get a chance, dear listener, the joy of the Lord is our strength. It's coming at a time in Israel's history where Ezra is reading the law out loud. I'm not exactly sure the timeline. You'd probably know this better than I do, Barry, but they had forgotten the law essentially.
Right.
And so Ezra's like dusting it off and he's reading it out loud to the people. And they're weeping because of how far they've gone astray.
Yeah.
And right there in the middle of the weeping, he says, no, don't grieve today. We're rediscovering the Lord. We're rediscovering our connection to the Lord, which is this law. The joy of the Lord is our strength. So then he tells them essentially to celebrate because they're rediscovering their identity as people of God.
Yeah.
But that's the joy of the Lord is our strength.
Right.
Rediscovering our identity as the people of God. That's my dad in the basement. Right. Am I a guy freaking out about, you know, the situation, the circumstance around him that seems bleak? Or am I going to remind myself of my identity as a child of God and how God is my provider and he's going to make a way. I know things look crazy and they're floating in water, but he's going to make a way. He's doubling down on his identity as a child of God.
Yeah.
And so anything that threatens to steal that joy, anything that threatens to distract you away from your identity as a child of God, make you feel panicked or frantic or make you feel alone, make you feel like he's not with you. Those are the things that threaten to steal your joy and rob you of your very strength.
Yeah. I'm curious too, because obviously everybody in the world is at different points in their faith journeys. Like, some people have been Christians their entire lives. Some people just became Christian today, you know? And I feel like this topic is one of the hardest ones to pull people back from if they have, if they're like younger in their faith or not as like seasoned in their faith or something, and they go through something that's really, really hard and they walk away, or they've the suffering or the perseverance or the endurance has crippled their ability to have faith. This is one of the things that's, in my experience, it's like one of the hardest things to pull people back into, like, because once so I'm thinking of people who, you know, lost a baby or something, like lost a child. And obviously that's traumatic and that would fall in the trauma category. And there's room for, like you were talking about, grief and all these things. But that caused these people to not just walk away from the church, but like denounce God, like that kind of stuff. And as a human, that's a reasonable reaction. Mm-hmm. But if I were to have a conversation with those people today being like, come back, or like, you know, anything that's like on this topic, endurance, hupomone, like anything like that, it'd be like rejected, like that, you know. So I feel like this is one of the hardest things to bring people back from if they don't have the deeper roots or the reps, as you were talking about, of kind of seasoning themselves. So how do we, like, we've all been Christians our entire lives, the three of us. Mm-hmm. And so for us, we're talking about it is different than if somebody who became a Christian last month
Yeah.
Is yeah. The concepts are all the same, mm-hmm. but like how we would talk about it may be different. Does that make sense? What I'm saying?
Yeah. The thing that keeps going through my head as you're saying that, Tyler, is just the fact that we are so hyper individualistic as a culture right now. And I think I know the couple you're talking about, and I don't know the entire situation of like what kind of community they had, but I do know in general, we are very isolated people in our faith, and we may have a couple people that were around us that we share our faith with, but most of church history has involved every person being deeply rooted into a much bigger community of people who have all generations represented. There are people who've been walking with the Lord for decades and decades, walking alongside people who are new in their faith. And in a setting like that, where there's true community and depth of relationship, excuse me, in a setting like that, it isn't on that individual. It's not their responsibility to have all of the wisdom they need in that moment to endure. Sometimes it is like Dad was saying a few weeks ago, enduring together. Yeah. There comes a time, especially in tragedy, where it's that community coming alongside of you saying like, we'll carry the load with you and we'll believe for you right now. Like that kind of thing, which I think we're sorely lacking these days. People tend to be kind of moral free agents, and they're very isolated, and they're very, we kind of do things our own way. And yeah, nobody really wants the friction that comes from being deeply rooted into other people's lives. Mm-hmm. And so we tend to just avoid it. So I don't know if that's the whole situation, but that's one big part of it.
I think that's one side of the coin for sure. For sure. I think there's like, I'm thinking of my sister who lost a child, and for her, instead of saying, God, how could you take him from me? I'm sure she did say that. She didn't say, God, how could you take him from me and then walk away from God completely because forget you. Instead, she pounded her fists into his chest for months on end, years on end, wrestled with God.
Yeah.
Instead of, you know, turning her back on God. Through that process, I preached about this a couple months ago. People kept telling her that there's a light at the end of the tunnel. And as she wrestled with God, she came to the realization that he was in the tunnel with her. He was the light in the tunnel. She didn't have to wait to get to the end of her grief and that there'd be some, you know, magical light at the end of the tunnel. But it's what she chose to do with her circumstance when she was assaulted with the brokenness of this world, mm-hmm. leaning into God instead of running away from him or pushing him away. So I think you're right, Barry. I think that my sister was in community. Mm-hmm. She obviously was in a family that was going to love her and rally around her and grieve with her and just be quiet and not have all the answers and admit when we didn't have the answers. And I mean, as much as my sister was beating her fists into God's chest, I'm the big sister and I'm watching my sister suffer and I hate it so much. And God and I had to have mm-hmm. a lot of words and there was a lot of fist pounding. But for some reason it was not, I'm going to push you away because you didn't come through in the way that I prayed you would. It was, I may never understand this, but give me the strength and be with me here in this dark place.
And it's remarkable that your sister kind of had that realization of the light in the tunnel with her, mm-hmm. because I think that's the joy that we're talking about. Mm-hmm. The recognition that in the midst of my darkest moment, the God of the universe loves me so much that he's here with me in the midst of it.
Meet me here.
Yeah,
yes.
That's joy that is not happiness.
Right.
It's something much deeper.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
My sister's name is Felicia and her name means happiness.
That's funny.
In my early 20s, I went through some of the darkest times of my life, and I was in college. The person I thought I was going to marry, turns out, obviously, I did not marry them. They turned out to be somebody that we say, like, you know, you're not who I thought you were type mm-hmm. deal. The money I'd saved for that life, like, I blew on bad decisions and things that were harmful more than helpful. Throughout that period, I went through a 6 week period where I went to 5 different funerals of people that I cared about and different phases of life. And I've talked about this on the show a long time ago, but the perspective I had was that I did not feel like life was worth living. I remember being at someone's parents' house. It was like for spring break, someone's parents' house. And I was there because I was spending the night to attend my uncle's funeral in the morning. And while I was there, I got a call that one of my good friends was killed in Afghanistan. So I would have to leave his house or leave that place after the funeral to go to another funeral. And I was 21 years old. I didn't know how to deal with any of this kind of stuff. I remember going to the ocean that night. They lived in Florida at this house. And I remember going to the beach and the ocean that night. And I remember cursing God. I remember standing in the ocean, screaming at the top of my lungs, like, I will never believe in you again.
Lieutenant Dan.
Yeah, Lieutenant Dan and Forrest Gump. And I stayed on that beach all night. And I remember being there when the sun came up and seeing that. And when I got back to this person's mom's house that I was staying at, her mom sat me down. And she obviously knew some of what, she was there when I got the phone call. Mm. Like, she saw me basically like leave the house. And this is before cell phones. So like nobody knew where I was that
yeah,
night.
Yeah.
But in that moment, she sat me down and she's like, I know that you're lost. I don't know why this is happening to you. I understand why you've made, because this is like 3 months of making really bad decisions for myself. And then on top of this, all this stuff started happening. She's like, I understand why you've made some of the choices that you've made. But God has something to say to you in this. And he has much more for you. And someday you're going to help someone else who's not as strong as you go through something that they feel like they can't handle. That was when I was 21. So ever since that moment, it got me thinking that maybe sometimes our suffering isn't for us, but sometimes, not all the time, but sometimes it's for someone else.
Our suffering is for someone else. Yeah.
Sometimes our suffering helps shape someone else's faith. Because last week, I found myself in a situation with someone who is in the middle of their pit saying almost the exact same words to that person.
Yeah. Mm.
I said, someday you will be able to look back. If you allow God to speak to you in this moment, you will be put in a position to help someone who isn't as strong as you going through something like this. If you allow God to speak to you in this moment. Mm. And that's been 20 years in the making for me.
Sure.
And so it made me wonder, like, sometimes is our suffering not necessarily for us, but God could use our suffering for someone else. Not just like we get to look back and be like, okay, I've processed it for 20 years, but that person said that to me in the moment.
Yeah.
And 20 years, I mean, I've had many other interactions with people that I've gotten to share that story, but like after you preached it, it was like 2 days after I had this conversation with this person. Mm-hmm. And I was like, man, sometimes I feel like my suffering or our suffering isn't just for us. It's to build the faith of others.
Yeah. Mm. In my experience, it's mostly both and, right? It's a refining process for me. The different hardships and the different trials and the different things that I've faced in my life have all been to shape my character, to strengthen my character, mold me as a person, mold me after Jesus, you know, all the things, growth, endurance, all of it. It's definitely been for me. But in almost every case, you know, my grandma passed of Alzheimer's when I was a young parent. Desi was an infant. I don't even think she was walking yet. And I lived 45 minutes away in the inner city. And every other day I fought traffic to get to my grandma and to care for her until the day she took her last breath. And I was with her when she crossed over. I can talk to other families who are facing, you know, that particular crisis. and comfort them with the comfort with which I was comforted when I was going through it myself. That trial wasn't just for me. But I take what I've learned. I take the comfort I was given, and I help other people through what they're going through. In almost every hardship I've ever had, I can point to a myriad of things I've been through, and then point to occasions where I met somebody who was going through the same thing or wrestling with the same thing or suffering in the same way. And able to encourage them and uplift them and comfort them. Just with having been there, right? We talked a little bit about that last week. Like, in keeping with what Dave was saying, with we don't go it alone, you know, finding somebody who's been there before, finding somebody, and we don't go through the exact same situations and circumstances, but finding somebody who can understand what you're wrestling with, what you're dealing with, what you've suffered. And going through life together, going through life with somebody who's a little bit further ahead of you down the maze, somebody who's been there before.
Yeah, and you talked about a story where you had a hard week last week, and you came to your family, and you're like, it's just so heavy, and I don't know what all you were wrestling with internally in that moment. But after talking about this the last couple of seconds, I'm like, okay, how do we carry one another's burdens without being crushed ourselves by the burdens? Because it's like one thing for them to be going through their own crisis, and you, Maren, carry people's burdens more than almost anyone I know.
Yeah, agreed.
I don't know if you feel like you're getting crushed by those burdens, but how do we as Christians do that for one another without being crushed ourselves by each other's burdens?
That's a lesson I'm learning. That's a lesson I'm still learning. And I think my first answer is I'm not alone, right? Some of my friends that are in crisis are also friends with both of you, just so happens. And we have shared their burdens together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It doesn't fall squarely on my shoulders. You've been there and we're supporting the people we love together.
Yeah.
I don't see it as, I keep going back to that picture of Atlas you shared that first week. I don't see it as that, you know, the weight of the world squarely on my shoulders. I think the weight of the world is evenly distributed across the three of our shoulders sometimes, sure. You know, because as I'm telling others, they don't go it alone. I also don't go it alone.
Yeah.
One of my dreams in the coming years is to really expand on what we offer as a care ministry here within our church, and just develop a robust team of people we can call on, people who maybe themselves have suffered tragedies and circumstances and gone through things in their life that they now feel like they're in a position to be able to help and serve others, you know, who might be just at the beginning of their tragedy or somewhere in the middle of their tragedy. Again, people who are a little bit further through the maze, who can walk alongside other people who feel like they're trapped in the middle of that maze, you know?
Yeah. I also think, I mean, you use the analogy of weightlifting in your message. And I think there's a lot to be said, not just for the heavy weight of our own burdens, but we also build strength when we help bear the burdens of others. And just like with weightlifting, and just as you said, like there's a time when we need to rest, because if we're always just lifting, you'll burn out all your muscles and you'll go to the hospital. Like you have to actually rest if you want to get strong. But it's that consistency of yes, I'm learning what it means to carry my burdens. I'm intentionally helping to carry the burdens of others. I'm strengthening myself so that I can lift the heavier weights. And that, as time goes on, as we faithfully step into the lives of others, that's how we build up that strength where we aren't crushed by the weight. But again, like you said, rest is part of it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And that's the part I have the hardest time with.
Yes.
I know that rest is part of it. But it can be hard to make myself stop and make myself actually rest. And, I'll be the first to admit I'm not great at that. But I know, I think I'm just this person who wants to like go really hard in life and leave it all on the table.
Yeah.
You know, live fast, die young, go hard for Jesus. But I have to learn how to pace myself in this life and what that looks like and what that means. And I have mentors in my life who are far down the road of ministry, people who've been in full-time ministry 40 years plus,
right?
Who are currently speaking into my life about how to build healthy practices of Sabbath and rest into my life so that I can go hard, because it's not all about just, you know, burning out.
I'd be interested to know how your grandmother has done it. Because if you live as long as her, you're not even halfway through your life yet.
No, which, I won't. But,
which, but I'm just saying,
I'm telling you right now, somehow,
like, she didn't live fast and die young.
No.
She found a way to endure and to still be kicking in her 90s. So
he who dwelleth in the secret place of the Most High shall abide beneath the shadow of the Almighty. That's her
New
secret.
New King James. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Old King James.
Dwelleth. Dwelleth.
Dwelleth.
That is her secret. That's her secret. She's never more than 5 feet away from her Bible. I kid you not. Mm-hmm. She's, and not even that, she has the word in her heart.
Right.
So if she's ever 10 feet away from the Bible, it's okay. She's got the word hidden in her heart. That's how she does it. And she's respected her temple. Her body is her temple. When I spent the night at her house last summer, she has this little pedal thing. She could sit in a chair and just like bicycle with her feet.
Nice.
Because motion is lotion when you're 99, motion is lotion when you're 42, like, just keep it moving. So she's always taking good care of herself, but more than that, she's always taking good care of her heart and her soul. Dwelling in that secret place, y'all.
I think it's been a great series. It's been super challenging, and I still have a million more questions about endurance, building up our faith. But unfortunately, we got to end the series here.
Yeah,
we got to go somewhere else.
Did it feel? I had a hunch whenever back in, I don't know, August or something, when I thought, let's do a series on endurance in January. Does it feel like we got it? Like I got that timing right on that one?
Barry, what do you think? What do you think?
Yeah, I think so.
I said something in the message yesterday about how 2025 is, she ain't no punk. Yeah. Okay. She has been fighting back since day one. Yeah. And someone in the congregation sent me a text just about that line.
Yeah.
She said, 2025 ain't no punk. 2025 has been January was 2 years long.
Yeah.
That's what it felt like. Yeah. January was 2 years long. I think you were right, Barry.
Well,
way to go. Way to listen to the Holy Spirit on that one.
That's what I was going
to
say. I think it might be the Spirit. God, maybe we'll do Endurance Part 2 January,
Barry,
2026.
Where do we go next then?
All right. Next, this coming Sunday, we're starting a new series, 7 weeks. It is called Reimagine, and it's actually a sermon series that is part of a much bigger initiative that we're launching. I'm talking like you guys don't know everything about it, but whatever. for the friends of the pod, it is going to be really exciting. I'm going to be sharing this coming Sunday all about some of the specific things that we're going to be doing, that we're dreaming of doing as a community, even some upgrades that are dreaming about doing with our building, and all of it is really, really exciting. And I'm also super excited to get into Philippians and think about Paul, poor old Paul in prison. Mm-hmm. And and what does he have to say as he looks at the end of his life to his favorite church?
Yeah. Cool. So we'll be back. And Barry, you're preaching 7 weeks in a row.
Woo!
It's going to be just
first
the three
time I've
of
ever
us.
Done that. That's for sure.
It's going to be the three of us for so long.
Endure. Yeah, it will. Maybe we can find some special guests.
I'll rotate
to join
out.
Us.
Rotate someone in.
No, you got to be here because we got to hear all about the seminary starting.
Yeah.
Pray for me, y'all.
Yeah.
Endure.
All right. We'll be back next week. Maren, will you please send us out?
I will. Do justly, love mercy, and walk humbly with your God.
And we'll see you on the other side of Sunday.